Welcome to Five Things with Angie B. I'm your host, Angela Betancourt, and we're well into season two. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm super excited about my guest, Christina Webby. Today, we have phenomenal background and shared stories, and I'm really excited that she's going to be here today to share information about how she views the world and how her new organization, Growth View, is bringing some fresh perspective to issues of the day. So I'm really excited to have her on. Christina, her personal growth story has evolved into a professional journey in finance and international development. She's worked in wealth management for top-tier private banks in New York and Geneva. She then went into strategy consulting, particularly in technology and large investment banks. She then combined her academic background in politics and international development to work in sub-Saharan Africa, particularly in Sierra Leone, which is where we met. And her aim is to facilitate GDP growth and employment opportunities that will help communities and will build inclusive businesses. And I really think that all of the listeners today are really going to walk away with five really amazing points of view that I highly encourage you to also reflect on today. Christina, welcome.
Thank you very much, Angela. I'm very excited to be on your podcast. It's really an honor to be speaking to you. And I think what you're doing is fantastic. So I'm excited to talk about the different topics on social and economic impact and how can we as individuals really help our societies and also help and shift how we view the world, which is really my aim from my personal story to what the industries I've worked in and the experiences, as you know, as well in Sierra Leone and West Africa, how as individuals we can actually make the world a better place. So I'm very excited to talk about this.
I'm excited too. And so I want to just kind of share a quick overview of the five really interesting topics that I really think are highly relevant to the world today. And it's really embedded in a very positive message around positivity and looking at the world from a less dark place, which I think a lot of listeners can relate to. And one of the points, Christina, that that really I think intrigues me about you and how Growth View came along is this passion that you have around helping others. Share a little bit about that.
Yeah, so actually, I mean, it started really at a young age, and I was quite fortunate really to work in very exciting industries, but my childhood wasn't the easiest, I would say. And so I knew very early on what social support and social help meant. I mean, my background is, my grandfather is Syrian, my father's Colombian, but I grew up in Switzerland. And you wouldn't expect that in Switzerland, actually, there would be any social issues. And that's something that has been overlooked quite a bit in developed countries, is how can you actually help children there and help the younger generations and the youth. And so my passion really came about already when I was 15, where I wanted to be a lawyer and I wanted people to be more informed of their rights and how, for example, in the US, I saw how minorities were being treated. I went to high school there in Florida and I became emancipated at the age of 15. And my passion started from there, and I realized how knowledge and education was so important for our younger generation to be able to help themselves and also know what opportunities are out there and what they're good at and keep that passion for their interests and how can they actually help themselves and reach out to the right people and keep that motivation. And I think it's something that is so relevant today, both in developing and developed countries. And we see it in some of the poorest countries in the world where, as you know, Angie, we worked in, as keeping that passion for life, but also knowing what your interests are and prioritizing education. So I realized that the only way I could help others really is by first helping myself and getting to a stage where financially I'm able to do it, and also where I can have that outreach and understand different society, different values. My own background is quite mixed. So I have the Latin American side of Colombia, then I have the Western influence of growing up in Switzerland, and then with the Middle Eastern background. So I was always trying to really understand people, and having been from family to family growing up, intrinsically, I was right away a social person, I would say. And this is what Growth View in itself, so the publication I founded, was to shift social and economic impact. So you can't help others unless you actually can afford it. And to be able to afford it, you need to be able to know what your own skills are and to have the capital to do it. And this is where Growth View has emerged, really, was in how can we have a broad audience and make them reflect on themselves and how can they make money, but also do good in the world and help, let's say, their neighbor and help. And from there on, it starts on a small scale. When you help your neighbor and you help your family member, from there on, you'll realize what it is, what the value of it is, and what you can get out of it. And so this is where Growth View is really different from any other publication, is instead of The Economist or The Times, which discusses only the politics of it and the economy, I bring back the social component to how does changes in the economy and the markets affect someone like you, me, our neighbor, someone in one of the poorest countries in the world.
Thank you. I love that. One of the things that I took away from everything that you just said is that you really found through your own life experience the inspiration or that motivation to want to help others. And I think about people that have asked me, you know, how can they help? And I like to think of, well, there are two, you know, there's two things. You can think about your own personal experience and find the inspiration within that through your personal experiences, through what you've gone through, and look at what were those areas and use that then to give back and to find the help, right? The help that perhaps that person that you needed, now you can help someone else get that. But I also think it's a really good way to listen and put yourself in someone else's shoes if you don't have that personal, you know, that personal story or history, that you then listen to these exact type of experiences where you can then put yourself in someone else's shoes, in order to be that kind of a helpful person. I think, and I love that that's kind of inspired and has kind of been, you know, has been kind of this journey to where you are now with Growth View, which is really exciting.
Yeah, and like, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and just building on what you just said, you're completely right. It's about, If you haven't experienced it, we can't expect everyone in the world and in societies to say, okay, they can understand, have been lived through it. Let's say a natural disaster or famine, or we can't. It's impossible. So like you really really rightly said, it's about listening and about opening your heart and mind, and taking that time to try to understand. I think that in itself already can help so much someone.
Exactly. And so I look at that in terms of putting yourself in the other person's shoes, exactly, if you haven't gone through that experience, and then learning and listening and finding those opportunities to do what you can. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's interesting to me from about Growth View is this angle on this economic view, if you will, of helping people and helping societies. Talk a little bit about that point.
Yeah, it's a good question. So at the end of the day, we have to be realistic, and it's a bit how I've lived my life and how I actually view the future is quite in a pragmatic and realistic way. We can't pretend that by everyone doing good, the world is going to be a better place, right? There's some big drivers there in the sense, and economic drivers are one of them. So ultimately, people will always intrinsically follow where the money goes. Sadly or not, it's not for me to say. And so that's why I take an economic perspective on it, of saying, where is the money going? So if we're talking about donor funds, prioritizing private sector development or disaster relief, or let's say company funds that are going into CSR, so corporate social responsibility, and now the big buzzword of impact investment, we need to actually start looking a bit more, how can we shift and actually influence where this money is going to go? Because it's only us as individuals that have that say, right? And ultimately, with our own interests, is where the market is going to go. And people will invest in areas that they know are sustainable and will always have a consumer group and a customer group and will bring back a revenue to the company. And in my last publication, what I'm really pushing for people in society to do is to self-reflect and to reflect on what is it that I'm interested in. Do you like art? Do you like music? Do you like sports? Do you like politics? Because what you're interested in will always be sustained, regardless if you're making money from it. So if you like singing, which is my personal passion, I've always sang. It was my way to escape as a kid. It was my way to connect with people through emotions. And I think that that's where, as an individual, I'll sing regardless. I might put a bit more time sometimes to it and a bit less others. But at the end of the day, the music industry is one of the largest, right? And it's because people have shared their interest and their passion for it. And it's something that we're not looking enough into in developing countries and frontier countries, is we're always focusing on what is it that they need, which is rightly so. They need a roof on top of their head. They need food on the table every day. How can we start talking about their interests or their passions? But I disagree. I think both are just as important, because if you're only looking at what it is they need on a day-to-day basis to survive, that is not what is going to lead to well-being and happiness. And if we started looking a bit more forward and in a more fresh thinking way, I would say, why don't we actually look at what people are interested in and passionate about? And that will drive the economy as well.
I love that. I think that's, it doesn't seem that that's the traditional approach, right? That's not the...
It's not, yeah.
It's, you know, coming, you know, having worked in a private sector development program, you don't really hear so much about what you just brought up, this look at the interests and the passions and how art and music are integrated into that space. How does art and music, and this is one of the points, but how does art and music bring the influence on, you know, back into the society and connecting people, but also being an economic driver? How, because I think it's fascinating. I agree with you that, you know, you look at everywhere we've been in the world, sports is a thing. It doesn't matter if you're playing in dirt and mud and it's raining outside and it's flooding and it's the worst case scenario, people are playing football on outside, you know, children are playing. So, you know, I find that, I would love for you to elaborate a little bit more on that. How does this tie together and how does growth view make these connections?
Yeah. So I think, growth view is really, I'm not trying to preach in growth view or try to tell people what to do, right? It's what I'm aiming is to pose questions, right? And make people think and reflect on themselves inwards. And one thing I realize is that people connect, and we're living more and more, as we know, in a social world. But social in which sense? Is it because we're connected on Instagram, or is it because we actually have similar interests and we vibe on the same things? You get excited about something. And it's funny to see, like, in the last years, how music actually has become more and more of a big topic. People are connecting with artists and are really getting that emotional part from it. And it's something that has been missing in the last, I would say, 10 to 20 years, is the emotion, right? We all talk about it's quite sad what has been going on in the world. And the only emotions we talk about are the negative emotions, right? And we want to bring back some positive emotions as well. And I think that that's what will keep people motivated individually, like my story as a kid, when I would sing, it would be able to make me disconnect completely from everything else that was going around me. And I remember I would sing actually with my brother, and then he would play the guitar, or sing with my neighbor, and it would be in the room forever and just do music, because it would allow me to actually not think about all the bad things around, right? And I think that that's where art or music or sports are something that really has an emotional aspect to it. And it connects people within a society, regardless of where you're from, regardless of your demographics, regardless of your family. And it's something that brings happiness and joy. And it's so important to bring back that positivity and connecting people on a different level than tech or financial, or it's about really bringing that emotional and behavioral side back into our societies.
I'm a big fan of positivity,
you're probably the most positive person I know, Angela.
But you know what, let me say, I have my moments. You know, I turn on the news and I have my moments where I'm just sitting there wondering what is going on.
Completely. Yeah.
In the world where there are horrible, you know, natural disasters happening, right? There's fires, mm-hmm. there's earthquakes, there's just horrible, tragic things going on all around the world. But then I feel that there are things that humans are doing to add to that negativity mm-hmm. that doesn't need to happen, when all of that can be refocused to a more positive perspective, where more, you know, where that all that energy can be spent on finding positive solutions, growing economies, helping the poor, mm-hmm. creating innovation. But yet, so I have my moments where I'm not the most positive person in the world.
And I mean, so is everyone, right? It's impossible to be.
it's horrible, but you know what? In music, in dancing, in the arts mm-hmm. is where I find some sanity, and mm-hmm. and that keeps me focused. And I kind of want to segue this now into a point that I think is so critical, this idea of simplicity mm-hmm. and minimalism, because I, for my own sanity, I see something horrible happen, and then I need to kind of, and then I start thinking about what can be done about this. And obviously that needs to be broken down into smaller pieces. Mm-hmm. I think some of the biggest challenges we face in the world today can really be helped by smaller things coming mm-hmm. together. So talk to me a little bit about keeping it simple.
You said it really spot on, and it's the way I live my life, right? And I'm not saying I was always like this, but I try to communicate in a simple way, but I also try to live my life in a simple way. And I think I'll just give a bit of an analogy to last year on minimalism. And I was living in London, and I lost everything. Right. So I had to sell all my furniture, my clothes, my jewelry, and so forth. And it kind of just brought me back to the basics. And this is how, I mean, even Growth View got founded. This is how I really connected with myself and what I was passionate about. Because you really break it down to, who am I? What are the basics of what is it that I want in life? And what is it that when in 20 years time I look back, I'll be proud about? And having that minimalism actually started with, I would say, physical goods, of not having any jewelry. And I'm not saying that I'm someone that's living like always that way and vegan and not wearing anything that is, let's say, branded. I'm not saying that. And it's for each person to decide how they want to live their life. But what I'm saying is that having less stuff in my flat and just having less stuff in general has allowed me to have a clear mind. And I mean, Steve Jobs, for example, he would only wear turtlenecks because turns out you waste so much time in the morning trying to figure out what to wear, or when you travel, that if you just had a new, like, let's say uniform, it makes it so much easier. You can actually spend that time, like you pointed out, Angie, is that you can spend that time on other things. And I mean, it's fine if you love taking your time choosing an outfit in the morning, that's fine, but not everyone does. And being minimalist in your way of living is also a reflection of your way of thinking. And when you can think clearer when you don't have this clutter, and that's how you can solve problems, right? Is that if you start looking at, when you turn on the news, like you said, and you see all the problems in the world, you just feel helpless and you feel like whatever you do is not going to actually accomplish anything. The same with voting. I mean, that's why we're still pushing for the right to vote. It's crazy that decades and decades later, we're still pushing for people to vote. And that is, it goes with the psychology and the behaviors of people. And that turns us back to, why are we not voting? And I find it just crazy that governments are not able to make or incentivize individuals to vote. And it really, if we broke down that problem in itself, it comes back to us as individuals. How do we feel we can have an impact? And if we broke down problems in the world and what we can actually control, and I have this all the time when I speak with friends, we go for a drink, go for a coffee, and they'll put 10 like huge problems on the table. Their job, their it could just be so many problems at once that of course it seems unsurmountable. You need to break it down into the things you can control right now. And when you have actually then had a positive result from it, you'll feel so much better. So if you actually break it down in a sense where, even with, let's say, poverty, if you start off by even just helping your neighbor and helping the people around you, that in itself is already contributing to lowering the level of poverty, in a sense. And this is where we have to not overcomplicate things and actually live our day-to-day life with this view of how do we actually want to have an impact. And that will keep us motivated as well. And it really starts with, what is it that I can control and how can I actually help within my community or within my society? And from there, it's a snowball effect. And if everyone would do the same, it would actually start shifting how people think about it, and they would feel more empowered to create change, in a sense.
I love that, because I think empowered people are positive people in a way, I think, because I think when people feel empowered, they feel that they can do something. I think that they feel that, okay, I'm gonna make some change happen, whether it's in my own life or whether it's in my community, what in the world, in my job, with my family. And then I think that, you know, that action, that doing, that wanting to do, that intention is a positive thing. And I think once you have, you know, you start that momentum of positivity, I think it puts you more on a solution-minded track where you can be more innovative and think of ideas and be inspired to want to do things. And I agree, that does, to me, tie into economic empowerment and economic development. If people feel that they are empowered and in a position, yes, like, you know what, I can do something, I can have impact, start that business.
Absolutely. You need to be able to keep it simple. And I noticed it just in the way when we speak, and it's about always overcomplicating it. If you can't just break it down in simple terms, let's say if you have a startup and you just, and it takes you 20 minutes to explain what it is, that means you yourself you don't even understand it yourself. If you're able just to make it in very simple terms for everyone to understand, then that means you've reflected on it. And I think that it's about really keeping it simple. If you have, and something I wrote in my last publication, kids are the best at this. Kids can keep it simple and they don't overthink. So if you ask a kid, oh, what do you want? It's going to be a yes, no. I mean, they'll say, oh, I want candy, or yes or no. And UNICEF uses this as a way for them to build their projects and to build some of the initiatives that they take, is actually getting direct feedback from kids, because they won't, they'll just be direct. They're not going to fluff it up. They'll say, I'm bored of hearing the same story at school, or they'll say, well, I have to sit on the floor every day at school. We don't have any tables or we don't have any lights. And they'll make it very clear. And it's something that as adults, I don't know how we've managed this, but we've overcomplicated it. And if we ask someone a simple question, most of the time it's not a yes, no. And there's always this gray zone. And if we learned how to even communicate in a very simple way, doesn't mean that we're less smart. It actually just means that we're trying to get a clear message across.
Exactly. And that is at the foundation of strong communications and marketing and branding in your business. Mm-hmm. Do you have a clear message of what you're trying to convey about your brand, about your business, mm-hmm. about your own personal brand? And it comes down to that, having that clarity, that simplicity in the message. Those are the most powerful messages, the ones that are crisp and clear and people can
understand. People can relate to.
People, mm-hmm. yeah, people can relate to. You don't, if you have to spend long periods of time explaining an idea, explaining a concept, I would question, have you narrowed that down to its simplest form?
Yeah, absolutely.
And extremely true of the marketing and branding and the communication space. And Christine, unfortunately, I wish I can talk to you. I mean, we can talk all day, but I wish the podcast ran all day.
No, but thank you so much. It's been
really fascinating. I congratulate you on Growth View. I will make sure to listeners that all of this stuff will be linked in the site and on.
And I always look forward to hearing feedback from people and thoughts on it, on how we can make this world a better place to live in, and how each of our societies and communities across the world can actually contribute to this. So I'm always open to anyone reaching out, and I thank you very much, Angela, for the opportunity.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much for coming on. I love this. And so yes, everything will be linked. Everything will be, information will be there. So if you want to learn more about Growth View or get in touch with Christina, you'll have all those contact information easily accessible. I thank all of you again for tuning in this week. Thank you so much. Please make sure to tune in next week. Christina, thank you.
Thank you, Angela, and talk very soon. Thank you.